So we're here with Mrs. Emma Johnson. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Are you enjoying the Delta?
Oh, I am very much. Do we have your permission to take this interview?
We do.
Okay, so when and where were you born?
I was born in, well, I was born in the county right next to this, Jennifer County, but I was born in the Delta, here. Not in Little Mississippi, which is where you are now. But I was born in which Little Mississippi is in Gallman County. We have a county line joining out here on Highway 61. Then you'd be going over into Jennifer County. Mm-hmm. Then this is I was born back over in Jennifer County.
Can you tell us a little bit about your early life?
Before I was married? Well, I was a typical teenager. We went to a public school, and we just right down here. I'm sure that you've gone by where the school was located because you'll see a grain elevator out there. I don't know if you've seen a grain elevator, but that was our high school, and the name of it was Lula Ridge, L-U-L-A, Ridge. And because there's another little town over here in Gallman County that is Ridge. So there was the children from Lula and then the children from Rich that made up this school. So you know we had a big population. I think there was about 8 in the senior class. So you know I come from a big school. And then my parents farmed when I was growing up. And we lived in a housing project that was built, back then we called it the FSA, Farm Security, but it's now called FHA, in which the government had provided us with a house with no bathroom or no plumbing or anything, and 40 acres. We bought from the government. And my family, we farmed that. I helped them farm. We raised cotton. We did not raise, cotton was the main crop back then. And then I grew up. And when I was 17 years old, you know, I fell in love. And what happened when you fall in love? So my husband borrowed $50, and we went to a small town, Hernando, Mississippi, and we got married. And we've been married 56 years. Now, I'm not telling you my age. Figure it out.
Congratulations.
I've got two sons, but before, when my husband and I got married, he got a job working at Ford Motors, which there was a plant in Memphis. And he worked out there. He was working there until my oldest son was born. And he was always a country boy. And he didn't like punching the clock, punching the time clock. So he left, and we came home. We moved back home. We was living in Memphis at that time. And I talked to a man about farming. And not any of you from it know what a sharecropper.
Oh, yeah.
You know what a sharecropper? I'm glad. Well, we made a sharecropper, my husband and I. And then this is when my oldest son was born, the one that y'all met at the gym. We made the sharecropper only the first year, and in the meantime I went to work with a factory of the jumper, which is a small thing, I'm sure that you have been back. At that time it was Acme Quilting Company. We saved our money, and then we had enough money and people had faith enough in us that they rented us a piece of land. Then we began to rent land and we made crops and we saved our money. We've eaten a lots of beans and cornbread. And man, they were good. Wish I had a bowl now. And so we saved our money. And one of the farms that we were farming, the man wanted to sell it. So we had saved enough money. Back then, what we had saved would be amount to about $1,000 of today, but we had saved $20,000, and we paid that down on that land, and then the landowner financed the rest of it for us, and then we continued to farm. My husband would buy cattle, and back then there was a lot of the farmers, sharecroppers and things going out where they had their mules, and he would buy the cows and the mules and take them to the stockyard. And that gave us another income.
And when was this?
This was in about, we got married in 1953, so this would be about 1956, and right in that area. What year was you born?
89.
You hear that, man? Talking to me. Going in 89. And then as we began to grow, and of course we could not live just strictly off the income that we were making and try to save any money, then my husband would have a crop. And then he would work for a cotton gin. In fact, you probably did not notice, but there's an old gin sitting right beside where y'all went the other day, our gin there. Well, that was what we call Edwards, Murray Edwards and them on that gin. So in the fall of the year, my husband would get the job of running the gin for them. And so then as it came along through the years, we were still farming. Nothing was easy now. You had to save every penny. Of course, I smoke. And I didn't save. I saved for my smoking. And then there came a cotton gin. No, it's not there anymore. We just tore it down. Right across the street, and the man wanted to sell the gin, and we had saved enough money, and then we bought that gin ourselves. And all in the meantime, as we were working and saving, a little 40 acres of land would come up for sale, and we'd buy it. And then maybe another 20 would come up the next year, and we'd buy. And but the first that we bought, I think it was 150 acres. I believe that first piece of land was 150 acres. Then we began to add to it. And then one year, we didn't really get to take vacations. So, but one year we were going to take a vacation. Had my boys and everything ready. And this truck drove up into the driveway, and the man came out back to where Roger was, and he had 300 something acres he wanted to sell. So, do you think I took my vacation? I didn't get a vacation. And it ended up like our vacations with my boys. They loved to swim. They were growing up. And they worked on the farm when they got up older. Well, in 10, 12 years, they would get out there and work. And so, their vacation consisted of us going to a Holiday Inn, renting a room, and letting them swim in the swimming pool. And they had a good time doing that, and they were satisfied. Just as satisfied as if we had taken them to Disney World. And it sure didn't cost us that much money. We still had to save. So we ran that in for several years. And of course, EPA, you know what I'm talking about when I say EPA. Mm-hmm. They always, because it was located in the city limits, the cotton gin puts out a lint or emission control, just like your coal industries and things like that. And so we was going to have to make so many, I don't know what the word to use, conditions to improve the gin to be in compliance with the EPA, because we were sitting in the city limits. And then this is when we bought this piece of land where the gin is located now. We bought that. And we decided it would be best to build that gin. And it was not no easy task. In fact, there's some pictures on the wall of the crew that helped when they was putting the press and everything in. We didn't have money to pay for the gin completely. We had all these little 20s and 40s and everything that we had bought. There was no lien against them.
What's that?
But the lien had to go against them now to be able to get the money. You see what I'm talking? You know what a lien is?
With the bank?
With the bank. A lien is mean somebody else has a hold on it the same. Mm-hmm. But see, nobody had a hold on any of this land. But I had to put it up to the bank to be able to borrow the money to build the gym. So we, I think it was in 73 or 75, we built the gym. And at that time, we had a partner that come in. In fact, he built one right. You notice that there's two gins there. But the partner quit farming cotton, so he shut his gin down. But in the meantime, we had the gin going. And then Bungie, you've heard of Bungie. Bungie is pretty good size in the soybeans. They have all the mills and everything, elevators and things, this ship sitting on the river. Mm-hmm. See? And a small elevator. They had a small elevator out next to where my school was, where I went to school. And so they wanted to sell it. So my husband bought it. And you know what? The only thing I knew about a grain elevator was when my husband would bring the tickets in to me, I'd know how to check them to see, make sure that everything was correct. Then they threw me here into this grain elevator. And I didn't know nothing about it. But you know what? How good God is. And if you listen to Him, He'll lead you in the right direction every time. A good friend would come in, and that was the first thing they would do, would teach me. Some expert would come, and they would teach me. So they taught me how to sell soybeans, buy soybeans, how to market the soybeans. And see, I was buying and selling from the public, and you ain't doing a that's not an easy job when you deal with the public all the time. But anyway, I did learn how to buy and sell Chicago Board of Trade. That's where the market comes from the soybeans. Mm-hmm. And I was very successful with it. Thank the God. They always lead you. And then all of a sudden, rice. This is a crop that was not planted here in the Delta very much. Then another county that joins is Whitman County. It's a small county further on out to the east. And they began to raise rice. And you're not familiar with rice. You are familiar with raising the rice.
Not the raising of rice, but...
Well, usually rice is raised on your heavier land because you have to flood it. And the heavy land will hold the water more than the sandy land. The sandy land, you know, will seep. So all back in Whitman County, they were planting rice. They need a place to dry. So, what did we do? We put us four more bins to the elevator, and I started drying rice. Now, far on, when you harvest the rice, you harvest it green, and then you take it to an elevator, and it has to be dried down. But this is whenever Jesus was with me again. My first load of rice came in. I didn't know how to grade that rice. In fact, we had never even raised any rice. I probably knew as much about raising rice as you do. So you know I didn't know. So anyway, I did. Took that sample, and then something still didn't seem right. And then here come walking this man into the elevator. And I said, you know what? I just don't believe I'm grading this rice correctly. He got up there and told me how to grade the rice. Of course, I corrected the tickets that were, and I had made the mistakes on. I corrected them. So, then I was in the rice business again. Then down at Cleveland was whenever we had a good friend, James Smith, which the name of the company was Delta Rice Sales and Service. He helped me a lot. He helped me. He knew all of the rice farmers that was over in Quitman County. So if they was looking for a place to dry rice, you know where he sent them? He sent them to Miss Emma. That's what they all called Miss Emma. They would send me to Miss Emma. So I had the next year I added some more bins, and I added four more bins. So I ended up with four quads with four bins to a quad. That's one section. You have a leg up there, and at the top of that leg you have little elevators to go down, mm-hmm. to go into your tank. And then you have stirrers that stirs this rice. Then you have heaters there, and you set your moist to dry your rice.
And what are bins?
The what?
What are bins?
In the bins.
Mm-hmm. You said you added four new bins?
Yeah. I keep adding four.
Well, what are they?
Where are they?
What are they?
You want to know what a bin is?
Oh, you don't know what a bin is.
Mm-hmm. I'm a city boy.
I'm a country boy. A bin is one of these. You'll see a lot of them as you go now. Big galvanized tanks. Sitting on the side of the road, you've seen the big galvanized. Mm-hmm. And most of them, you're going to see three or four. And that's a bin right there.
Okay.
That's And see, that's why you have four, is because what they call a leg, which is actually like an elevator, that this grain will roll into this leg, and then it carry on up to the very top, and then it will grow, go down into that bin. Mm-hmm. To that bin. And what's a bin?
Stick out nose thing.
That holds the grain.
Exactly.
You passed the test. So, then we had a tornado to come. Gun through, and
when was it?
I don't remember when that tornado came.
Blew over.
But I had one black man that helped me. His name was George Fletcher. One of the best people you've ever been around in your life. He would have the key to the office. He would have my coffee made in the morning when I came to work. But then one day, at the same time, we had an anhydrous ammonia. Are you familiar with anhydrous ammonia? It is a liquid fertilizer that's compressed into a big tank. And you put it out onto the cotton. You have little disc and that things, and it goes down into the ground and you put it out. But then you have feed tanks that you take out to the field, pull it out to the field and fill have that small tank that's on the back. So George was down there and had filled up the tank. And he brought it and I laid it. And then he carried it up to the shop. And all of a sudden,
0-6-2-6.
My youngest son, he heard a noise. It really sounded like a sheep or a goat bleating. But, you know, so they went out there to look. And George had overfilled one of the tanks. And what do they have on top of those tanks, which you call a pop-off valve? That's to release the extra pressure that's into the tank. He was out there, took his wrench, and he hit that valve to pop off some of that pressure. And when it did, that anhydrous ammonia came straight into his face. And it blinded him. And so George was living out there, had a house next to the elevator George was living there, and that's whenever the tornado took. This happened after the tornado. But anyway, we put some of it back, but it takes time when you're dealing with contractors. That's why we did most of everything ourselves. We could do it quicker than a contractor. And after George got blind, labor is a problem down here with labor. How's your labor in Pennsylvania? Is it plentiful? Your students, you don't know.
I have no idea.
Well, labor is a problem. We do not have enough labor. And in the fall of the year, you have to be careful to have a lot of Mexicans. And one day I was out of the elevator, came out, I kept books out there and bought sold grain. And I saw all of these vehicles coming in. I knew something was up. I didn't know what was up. When I went to the door, opened the door, ordinarily I don't do that. And I said, "Yes, sir, what can I do for you?" You talking about little gold badges flashing at you? And it was the immigration and OSHA. You know what OSHA? Tell me what OSHA. You say you do.
I know it's an environmental organization that has some regulations.
Occupational. passage. And even wage an hour. And you don't want to wage an hour. You don't know what wage an hour.
Yeah, paying per hour.
That's what this wage an hour from the state, they check you to make sure that you are paying your employees the correct wage an hour. And so what they were on, they were more on the Mexican labor than we had. And the immigration was on to make sure that all of these was legal. And, but it wasn't fun. I spent 3 days with them. And of course, a lot of them was legal. They all will present you a green card. But it's no problem with a green card. They can buy one. Mm-hmm. But I'm not responsible for it as long as I have a copy. What do we call an I-9? The Social Security and an ID with a picture of it. So we got through with the immigration and everything. They took part of them back. They even showed me how you could tell to where that Social Security was legal or where it was a fake. But I didn't tell that man. I didn't have time to check every one of those things. But anyway, everything went smooth. We wasn't fined or anything. They were very nice. And there were some things that we were doing wrong. And they showed us how to correct them. But in the meantime, we had bought land. Then after I had the elevator, this was about, Van, you worked for me 10 years, Amy. 12. Okay, going back 12 years ago because I had office in the elevator. And a man came to work for me. He worked for a very prominent accounting firm in Clarksdale by the name of Ellison Hirschberg. One of Roger had pneumonia. And I had pneumonia both at the same time. And we was in the hospital at the end of the year, and it was time to do all those reports, end of the year reports that you have to do when you're in business. You have a lot of government work to do. We've had a lot of papers, work, and everything to do for the government. So we called Van, and he came to the office, and he did all the end of the year, got the W-2s and everything like that out for me. So after we got out of the hospital, I tried to hire him. Well, Mr. Hirschberg had offered him a big prominent position there in his business. So he decided, he had done told Mr. Hirschberg, and he said he didn't want to go back on his word with Mr. Hirschberg. So there I was, keeping all the books, doing all the work, payroll, and everything. I had a granddaughter. She was in high school. She called me one day. Says, Memo, I'm broke. And I said, darling, I'm so sorry you're broke. There ain't no reason for you to be broke. I said, why are you running around? I said, you can't come out here to work. And then I will pay you. So she came out there to work. And every evening I'd pay her. Even whenever she wanted to go to nursing school. And when she was not in class, she would come to work. So I paid her. One day she told me, she says, Mama, you know, I'm the only senior. I skip a bag, you can tell me. I said, Mama, I'm the only senior that has a job. I says, well, what did you tell him you did? I helped my memo. So, I says, that's not going to work. You have better qualifications than just reading. So we got the one ads. Out of the paper. Got to the job section. And I says, what does this say? Talk about rates and measures. I says, when a truck comes in here and you weigh it, and then a sample comes out, aren't you doing weights and measures? She said, yes. I said, you qualify for a job that requires weights and measures. I says, okay. The 15th of every month, what do you do to the checkbooks? When you got to do all your tax deposits. I said, you see right here what qualified for you. You see right here where it says payroll clerk. What do you do that would fall under that category? She says, that's Grandma, when we do the payroll. So she learned a lot of what all she was doing. But anyway, the next year, Van called me. And he says, Miss Emma, is that job still open? Whew. He knew good and well I wouldn't have said no. I said, if you're sure you want me. I said, he's a CPA. And he said, yes, I'm sure. So he's been with us for 12 years. He didn't know what Miss Emma did until he came to work for me. You know, when you're an accountant, you don't learn all these little things that an average farmer has to do. You see, they have to know a little bit of everything. They can't be just an accountant. They got to know how to do section, township, and ranges on a map. Do you know?
No.
You know the north? You can read a map, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a travel map. But you always go to the north, don't you? Well, every little section over here, you'll see these little square blocks. Mm-hmm. They are all section, and each one, you know, will be a township and a range. There will be so many in one little section. That is an aerial photo of some of our land that we own. Over the years, we have bought. How many acres do we own, Van?
About 70,000.
About 70,000 acres of land. It wasn't given to us.
How much did land go for when you first started out?
We gave $150 an acre for the first.
The 150 acres that you first bought?
$150 per acre.
And do you know when that was?
In 52, well, about 56, 1956. Now you can look right up there on the wall and see what was the price of cotton through all the years.
That ain't much different than it is now.
The bottom's really falling out of it now.
How much does land cost now per acre?
It will run about, it's all dependent on the soil type, mm-hmm. but just come up with an open for about $2,500 an acre. It's not much for sale land. There's been a lot after the Wall Street. The stock market has been so down. There's been a lot of them speculators that's wanted to invest in, try to buy land. But unless you have to sell it, you don't sell it. You try to hold on to it.
How much do speculators figure into your business?
Into our business?
Mm-hmm. I guess the cotton business. Speculators.
The price. Like whenever the gas, mm-hmm. like an oil, crude oil of some kind, it affects every bit of the chemicals that we use. All the equipment's on diesel fuel. It affects that. Anything you want to buy in a plastic affects sale. It affects everything.
Does it benefit you or not?
No.
No?
It's fine. Not unless it's low, like it is now. I believe we paid $2.59 for the last load of diesel fuel. And we're talking about transport loads. Mm-hmm. Where, what was it, four? What was the high on the diesel?
I want to say it got like 4 or 2 late.
Farmer can't farm and pay that price, not with the price of cotton. Now,
what I was trying to say is, if you look on here, back in, say, let's just say right here, from 52 and 53, cotton was 40 cents a pound. Well, today it's 46 cents a pound. So it's not much different. But cotton pickers cost
$200,000, $300,000.
See, back then, to get by a cotton picker for, I don't even know, it wasn't there back then.
About 20-something.
Yeah. So the cost is everything gone up, but the price, but what you get for your crop hadn't changed. And it just makes it hard.
Now, y'all raise a lot of corn in Pennsylvania, too. Is that right?
I think so.
And I believe she said that y'all, that corn went for feed. In other words, food. Mm-hmm. Y'all probably have some canneries and things there in Pennsylvania. But it used to be, everything is so electronic now, man, has it easy.
Yeah, it is true.
All the cotton, you know, when you brought that limp cotton out of the gym, and then I told you you shouldn't go to Dumas, Arkansas to see how it's classed. Well, it used to be we used to get a card right back, and then we would have to post that class, but now it goes electronic, and Van can go to the computer and get the grades quicker. And the loan for cotton this year is 52. So actually what, that's for the medium grade is the loan for us, 52 cents a pound. So you look, if we had a buyer, say somebody from a mill, and this is soybeans right now. Right now today, soybeans down 36 cents.
From what? From what was it?
From the close of yesterday. But that makes them $9.22. They've been up as high as $15. But we was on the conversation of cotton. So December cotton right now is down 147 points. That's only 44.85. So we're not going to have anybody to come in. Nobody's going to want to come in and buy your cotton. And so what Van does, we put the cotton in the loan. You know what I'm talking about?
Government buying your cotton.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to be in here. You finish the stories.
But can you talk a little bit more about, you said it be graded in Arkansas?
At Dumas, Arkansas.
And what is that?
It's Dumas is a town.
I mean, like, what happens there?
This is where they, Van, do you don't have a class sheet handy, do you?
Well.
I don't know whether you remember seeing any of these little cotton leaf, the little brown spots in the cotton up there the other day, mm-hmm. which was part of the leaf. See, the gin cannot really get all of that out. So whenever the mill or anything, or we send cotton overseas, they want a grade, and it's bottled up on the grade.
These little, all these little numbers on the sheet, have a meeting. Like this is the grade and the leaf. The leaf is like when you go out there and pick it, if it ain't clean, you know.
He saw the leaf part in that cotton the other day.
The staple is the string. The mic. I don't even know what the mic is.
Yeah, no, I can't understand what the mic. I don't know why they
do it. Anyway, what happens is when you get a cotton, you cut a piece out of it, sample. And that sample goes to the classing offices, basically a federal classing office.
Right. It's a
federal
grade. About
the USDA. And they grade it. And you could, if it's a good cotton, you could get 2 or 3 cents above the loan what the government will pay you for it. If it's bad cotton, you lose 2 or 3 cents a pound. And that's how it works.
Okay.
You ship your cotton to a warehouse, which the warehouse is a cost there. And they hold the cotton until you sell it or until you forfeit to a loan. You forfeit to a loan and the government gets your cotton. And you got whatever the loan value is on that bale of cotton.
Is the quality determined by the cotton itself or by the cotton?
By the product, just the weather conditions.
Mm-hmm. So, and how do you think that the government or government policy hinders your business?
Well, of course, when you put it in the loan, you have to pay interest on that loan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but then you've got it, the loan, got your bill of cotton and a compress, so you're having to pay storage.
I wouldn't say the government policies, I mean, there's so many in the world to market, really, you know. China's gotten to where they're growing a lot of their own cotton, and you're not exporting a lot to China like you used to. And that affects, you know, what we get for the cotton.
And that affects the same thing with the soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't farm rice anymore, one thing, because, as I've already talked about, the labor. Of course, you can't get any Mexicans in here through the summertime because they're all seasonal workers. They just travel everywhere to work. And so what we do is we rent our rice land out. And at the same time, Van had worked for me, I think, 2 years, whenever these people was wanting, they was going to raise corn. They were big rice farmers, too. They, in fact, they even rented some of our rice land. They wanted to buy the elevator. And I had no help at the black man at the elevator because I told you my black man had gotten blind. And so the man that owned this house, he happened to die. And they wanted to sell this house. So we says, well, we'll sold the elevator, moved the office from out there. Move the office here, and it's full of junk. The government requires you to keep everything. You keep everything for the government. Now, I don't know where they require me to keep my cigarette butts or not. I sure want a cigarette. But then, I got the Tucson, and. Chuck is 53, the one that was going out. And they have, Alan had 2 children, a boy and a girl. And so his son went to college in aviation. And he has his license and everything for commercial license. Then we had 9/11. And when 9/11 hit, there was no jobs available for all of these commercial airlines. All of it put a halt to that. So he started farming with us. Then his daughter married, and she married a farmer. So he couldn't farm on his own. He was a small farmer, and you, small farmer just can't make it. They just always do it. But it's too much, costs too much to be a small farmer. So he wanted to farm, so he came in and farmed with us. Then my youngest son had a boy, had a son and a daughter. Well, his son graduated from, went to Moorhead. Junior went to a junior college. He studied some in real estate, but he couldn't ever pass a real estate license. To get it to real estate test to get his real estate license. So he came to farm with us. Then his daughter that married, she got married. And she married a guy that had went to college to be a, what was that band? Casino accountant, I think. Something to do with the casinos. Well, the casinos began to get so popular and everything. And then you get up and make so much and then they'll move you over. So he came and he wanted to farm. So what we have is, I call my grandsons. How many is it? Four grandsons. And two sons. We all farm together. They can get out there and drive a combiner. You know what a combiner is?
You drive it.
I'm going to give you an A. That won't last very long. You can't get by that very long. Because now everything's got a GPS on them. We got tractors and things now that has the GPS system, and all you do is sit up there and make sure the buttons are right. And that tractor turns itself around and then go right back around to that right row. And so, it won't be long. You can't get by saying a combiner. You drive it because they'll have GPS on it too. A combiner is a machine that reaps the grain.
Okay.
That's right. Cotton picker. It's a machine that picks the cotton, pulls the cotton out of the burr that's in the field. Mm-hmm. You know what a tractor is.
Oh,
you say tractor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know a tractor. So how do you say that the casinos have affected, have the casinos affected your business at all?
Not really, not our business. Mm-hmm. We were very... May have taken some female labor. But they didn't like to chop cotton anyway. But what is that? Was that 1,200 to 1,500 acres of land that we bought?
No, just
1,000. You haven't been across the river.
Yeah.
There is a casino sitting over there. Mm. You haven't seen the casino?
Not that one.
You've been looking at all the windows. You are in trouble. You better look at that. You know what counties are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm from the north, I'm not stupid.
I didn't say you were, because I really love you. And, Tunica County legalized gambling. So I'm assuming that's where you've been to all the casinos up there. Have you seen all of them up there? Okay. Here we are, sitting on the line. Tunica here. The home are right here. the rules of the casinos, they have to be sitting home, joining the Mississippi River. See, they can't be in on land. They have to be on the river. So here's all these casinos going up there. So Roger and I said one day, says, you know, we're just as stupid as we can be. We sitting here, right here on the line. We own 1,000 acres right there at the Helena Bridge that touch the water. It's an ideal place for a casino. So we begin to work. It all has to go through what we call the Board of Supervisors. I don't know where y'all have Board of Supervisors, Commissioners.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we do.
It's all counties, part of a government is what it is, to legalize it. So they brought a vote to legalize gambling in Coma County. So that left it open. Now we had to get a casino. We had to get somebody, but we didn't have to worry with that. Whenever they found that Coma County had legalized gambling on that spot, man, that phone rang. All these casinos was wanting to come down. And so on the casino in Tunica County received their commission by their patrons, don't they? They don't receive their money through the gross revenue, do they?
Well, you talking about the landowners or the county?
The county.
I don't have no idea. I know ours is based on gross revenue.
Yeah. Because I know that they said that we were the only one that ours was gross that way. But set up day and night figuring. Finally, we came with one. Furthermore than that, I liked the man. The way the man got into casino business, he had him a hot dog stand in Las Vegas. And he started selling hot dogs. And the next thing you know, he had opened him a casino, which was Lady Luck. So we went with him. And then that made things much easier. Everybody was very excited about the casinos. And because it was on our property, we received a commission off the gross revenue. So that helps matters tremendously. It helped with some of the sweats on some of the last land that we had bought. We had given a high price for it. So with the casino and everything, it helped to pay off the land and everything like that. So
we should switch the tape real quick.
That's about the end of it.
I got a couple more questions if you don't mind.
Easy. Gotta drive. Gotta drive. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Nice.
Oh, you're waiting to go.
Wait 5 seconds. So how would you say the, and since the 1970s or the 1960s, how do you say the world market has affected your business? And how has it changed?
The world. We had all the world trade and everything. I really can't tell much difference. As of today, now we did more export and everything then because these foreign countries was not raising enough grain and everything to live on. we did more exporting. But now they are raising more, and they're not importing as much as they used to. The same thing with we used to send most of all of our low-grade cotton and everything to China or Japan. They would, you know, import it for their manufacturers. And then what hurts has hurt worse than anything is because we had taxed our industries here in the United States so much to so many of them went, moved their factories and everything to foreign countries because of cheap labor. Labor, not pricing itself out. One more. That was a hard one. I really don't know how to explain.
When was this?
I said, one more question. I said, that was kind of hard because it was kind of hard to explain.
Yeah. When do you think that export changed, the amount of export?
When do you think it will change?
And when did it change?
Man, you help me on. Because we haven't been, in the last 10 years, we haven't been exporting as much. And of course, that affects our market. Mm-hmm. We got a newsletters and everything on there that tells you, like China is looking for how many tons of rice, or Japan wants some cotton. You know, all the it still goes to the supply and demand. So if the demand is great, the foreign countries is great, it affects our foreign markets. See, she's not getting any of this. She's busy writing.
Oh, I am.
He's giving me college questions.
I don't think the United States has got any meals, have we?
I don't think we've got any more meals either. I think all the meals are on the foreign country to make.
Textile meals.
You know what I'm talking about when I talk about a meal.
Oh, yeah.
Textile.
And when did they start going abroad?
They've done it within the last 10 years.
You were talking earlier about EPA standards and lint control. How much, but you said that you didn't fix up your gin because you just moved it or built a new one. How much would it have cost to fix the gin and bring it up to EPA standards?
It really would almost have been impossible because it was within a city limits. And, of course, the rules and regulation, because you have the population that you're polluting, so so it really and truly would have, we didn't put a pencil to how much it would cost. It was just almost an automatically thing after we found out that we could buy the land where we are sitting on now and just go ahead and be in compliance with the EPA at that time, because you have all these cyclones. And you don't know what a cyclone.
Oh, yeah.
You know what a cyclone? Y'all know a cyclone?
It's a little bit like a tornado, right?
It goes over the back of the gin. If you make a circle around the gin again, you see at the back of the gin, it's these big, long tanks.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
Those are cyclones back there. And all this emission from the gin has to go through these cyclones to put out clean air. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's a trash bin for the heavy stuff. It falls outside. That's a cyclone. It's not a tornado.
when do the Mexican laborers come in?
When do they come in?
Yeah. Or how long do they stay?
They'll only stay during harvest season, because then they're going to be leaving and going. Lots of them have been in Florida. Lots of them, they probably even will go down to the coast because they can find work there. Mm-hmm. Right now, after Katrina, like the hurricanes and everything down there, there's plenty of bork bar. In fact, I don't think we have a bore that's working down there now.
Why did Katrina, do you know why Katrina left open all that labor for them?
Because there's just so much common labor that the constructors are hiring to try to get Louisiana, Mississippi, all of that rebuilt back.
And when
have y'all been through there? Y'all should go. Where are you staying?
Jonestown.
Jonestown?
Mm-hmm. Where are y'all staying at Jonestown?
I stay in Tahoma.
Oh, she's in Tahoma, he's in Clarksville, I'm in Jonestown. With Sister Kat.
Well, what some of y'all were staying out there at Uncle Henry's at one time with you. Out on Moon Lake.
Oh, that's with professors.
Oh, she was staying out there on Moon. Is she still out there?
Yeah.
Now, see, that has a history to it.
What's that?
Where she's staying.
Oh, Uncle Henry's? Oh, yeah.
It's got a great history. Back to the gambling days. In other words, you call it the wine, women, and song.
Yeah, weren't they sending money back to gangs in Chicago or something?
Are you talking about the women?
Uncle Henry's, before it was turned into a hotel.
That might have been back during the Depression days or something like that. How many of your parents have went through the Depression? You probably got young parents, haven't you?
Well, not very young. Not by my standards.
See, I'm 73. Mm-hmm. And my husband's 73. Well, I'll be 73 next month. And he was 73 in July. So see, we're not. My grand.
Well, we're born in this world, right out.
Yeah. Because I remember Mom and them all during the Depression. I was just a little old bitty thing. That was the hard times after the Depression.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I was really, the only thing is I can remember is like, you killed lots of wildlife. That was your meat. You didn't go to town and buy anything. Oh, you had what you had, commissaires on the farm. Everybody back then just about made a sharecrop. Mm-hmm. White people, black people, all. And,
Is it in the 40s or early?
30s.
30s. Oh, during the Depression.
Yeah. Right after.
Oh.
I'd say late 30s. Let's see, I was born in 35. And I'm remembering it, so it would be.
Probably in the late 30s.
How was the experience of white and black sharecroppers different?
How was the experience?
Yeah.
There was no difference. I mean, you had your landlord. You know what a sharecropper does, don't you?
Basically. Can you describe it a little bit?
I'm just going to use, you had one man that had plenty of money, that he owned this land, and he did not farm the land himself. He would lease it to tenants. Say he would lease him 40, you 40, and her 40, 40 acres, and he would furnish you the seed, the chemicals, everything. You had to keep it clean, and you had to gather, harvest it. He would furnish the money to farm on. You had to do the work of gathering it. And then at the end of the year, whenever you gathered, it mostly was always cotton. When they would take it to the gin and they gin it. Then you would get a share if he was on average, you'd get half of the money. Whenever some of the pictures in there, you see where the cotton would be go to be sold to cotton buyers. Then he would sell the cotton. Then you get half of the money. You get a share. It's a sharecropper. They don't have them anymore.
And that's what you did before you bought land? Or rented land?
The first year that we, yeah.
What's the difference between that and renting land?
Well, renting land, you rent it as a cash price. In other words, if you had 100 acres and I wanted to rent it from you, and if I gave you $50 an acre, I'd give you a cash rent. I'd pay you cash for that. Oh. There's still a very few. I think it's you're going to go in to find most of your political people or doctors, different things like that, that own land, and they will rent it to you on a share. But they don't furnish it. You have to do it. It's a share of rent. There's not much of that anymore. But as I say, you may find some to do it. But we only sharecropped for 2 years.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was just that we had to get up and chop cotton. And then we had to pick cotton. And even though we were sharecropping, you didn't have any money to live on, then this is whenever my husband, Roger, would get out and buy him a cow, then take it to the livestock market and sell it. I had to have some money. Or else he'd find somebody that had a mule, wanted to sell the mule. He'd buy the mule and take it. And he's also went and bought a curb market. We would go to the curb market. A curb market is an area where produce, apples, oranges, potatoes, turnip greens, fresh produce and everything, they call that a curb market. And he would go up there and he would buy him a pickup load of sweet potatoes, turnip greens, apple, oranges, and then he would drive all the way through the country. And if he comes by your house, and if you wanted some turnip greens, you would buy some turnip greens. Maybe you wanted sweet potatoes. And of course, you're selling all this with a profit to make some money.
Do you know what that profit was?
Not that much. The biggest thing. Then through the very hot summertime, like June, July, watermelons. He'd go and get him a load of watermelons. Go to the curb market, get him a load of watermelon, and go through the country, peddling the watermelons, selling them. And maybe he gave 50 cents for the watermelon, he might could sell it for a dollar. You could never sell anything very high. People out in the country and everything, they just did not have that much money. I mean, they were happy. I mean, you don't have happy people today. You don't see many people that's happy.
He's happy.
Is he happy?
He's very happy.
Are we all happy?
But, I mean, you don't really have the love and the caring for each other that you should. Back to when I told you my parents, where we live in what we call the FSA home, where the government bought houses all down a road, and the government bought these 40 acres and put, I think it was about 10 families that live back out there.
What?
And Well, we didn't have anything. It was just the way that they bought it in the government finance, just like the FHA homes. See, I mean, you can buy an FHA home, you can buy some land, a house and some land, but your house would already be built today. These houses were not built. And back then, if you killed your hogs, cured your meat, you raised your garden, we never did quit. Canning, and canning, you don't know what I'm talking about when I say canning. No. It's whenever you you have deep freezes now. You didn't have a deep freeze then. You had a jar, and you process your vegetables and a fruit in a jar, a fruit jar. And you had a pantry, and then you lined up all this stuff that you can and put up. That was for your living through the wintertime. And we never did get through putting up vegetables until we had 500 quarts put up for the wintertime it took. And it was, I only had one sister and two brothers, and mother and daddy. Then it took 500 quarts for us to live and on for the wintertime. And it comes October. Most everybody up and down that line has used up all of their meat that they had cured. So if somebody would kill a hog, a swine, and they would take that and they would divide it up. And everybody up and down that road would have some fresh meat. Of course, it was too hot to kill your hogs for the wintertime. You had to wait till it was real, real cold to kill the hog. You didn't. Beef was harder to preserve than pork. But they have killed beef and canned beef on the roast. And they would make hamburger patties and put it in a jar and process it. You just did everything for survival. And then if you got more rain and you got grassy in your field, the ones that was not grassy, they would come up there and help you get what we call out of the grass, chop your crop for you, help you get your crop clean. And you never did expect any pay. You just did it because you had brotherly love for one another.
So
that's my roots.
So why do you think it's changed? Why don't you think there is that brotherly love anymore?
No, there's no brotherly love. No moral standards anymore. I mean, you...
The Almighty Dollar.
That's... He just said the Almighty Dollar. And that's what it is. Everybody craved the dollar. That's all they look for. Of course, Wage and I were here, just went up to $6.55 for agriculture. Well, that included agricultural labor too, didn't it? Because we had been paying our $7 an hour for several years. And then at Christmas time, we give them a bonus. And so they usually get them a good check. They always happy to get that check instead of increasing their hourly wages to go above the wage an hour. We just give them the extra bonus at the end of the year. They receive checks from 5, 6. What does Vernon get? 8. 8,000 a year. And it's much easier for you to do something with a large sum of money than you can with a couple of dollars added to your paycheck. you know, it's hard. It's hard to save. I bet you can't. I bet it's hard for you to save $2,000.
If I can find a job.
Yeah. What's the matter? Has jobs up there?
Not many.
I bet it is hard.
But back to the Mexican labor. During harvest time, when they're here, do they stay? I mean, do they, you know, just rent a house in Lula, or do they?
We, in fact, right here on the corner, a white house right there on the corner. Mm-hmm. I've got 4 Mexicans that live there. We furnish them the house, the electricity.
Yeah, hold up, we'll take off back down through there.
The water.
You know, feds regulate that too.
Do what?
Feds regulate their houses. You know, the federal government.
Oh, yeah.
You got to provide adequate housing for them.
If they live within 20 miles. I mean, 20 miles is a certain distance in there that if they've come in to work for and live within a certain area. But now, if they rented a house over there their own, it would be different. Because, see, we have all of these OSHA compliance. You know, when I was telling you about they all came to see me when I was at the elevator, you know what he got on to me about?
What?
My commode seat.
Pardon?
The seat on my commode in the bathroom. Because it was a round commode. I'm supposed to have a split seat.
Why would he do that?
I just said, yes, sir, I'll get it fixed. And I didn't ask him why. Because I tell you what, I was wanting him in and out. But, it's always, you just got all of these all of the time. Van reports that you sent out all the time. But we built, we used to have lots of Mexican labor. We built right there between the two gins, there was a house, long brick house, block house. We built that into 2 compartments, where 8 Mexicans could stay on one side and 8 could stay on the other side. Back then we used more Mexican labor. But everything is going more mechanical now. More mechanical. So there's not a demand for this labor. But yet, we have to use them because there's no other labor. All these other, you know what they're doing? They sitting on that corner, peddling dope, smoking dope, waiting for the dope man to come by.
A Mexican?
No, bull labor. See, they make enough money off of selling dope that they don't have to do any farm work. It's almost nowadays. People really can look at farm labor, turn their nose up at it. They just, you just don't do farm work.
Is here in Lula?
Well, this is the whole country. It's not just Lula. I mean, look at the ones on the streets of Memphis. They could be out working, but of course, engineering and everything is coming on so long. Just like I told you about the tractor. They can turn itself around. Coming right back on the right road. See, everything is going more and more. We have to do something to provide the labor.
Well, when you first started out, you used a mule team? Or?
Team of mules. 2. Those are teams there. The part of 2 is in there. Where a turning plow, a cultivator, and he used a payer. That's what you call a payer mule. Two of them is a payer.
And when did you start mechanizing or using more, I guess, technology?
Mechanical.
Mm.
We bought, I guess it was in 58, we bought the first combine. We gave $2,500 for it. And the company financed it for me. A combine today, you're looking at $200,000. You see, all this technology. But then, so then we began to, you know, have the combiners to harvest the grain. We still picked the cotton by hand for a long time. And then finally bought what they call a one-row cotton picker. A cotton picker that would pick one row at a time. And we used that for long. And then it was about 14 years ago, I guess.
Hold up.
I don't know what year. Well, man wasn't working for us at that time. The prices was depressed. The weather was bad. And we looked like that we were going to go into the red in farming. And then my husband, he took our cotton pickers. By that time, we had accumulated more cotton pickers. And went to Texas, and followed the harvest, picking cotton for the farmers out there in Texas, because their crop always came off earlier than I was back here, and around Corpus and everywhere like that, they were always subject to hurricanes, and they didn't want a hurricane to come in there and destroy their crop. So, and that saved us all the years we found. We've never gone into the red. But that don't mean that we hadn't saved. That's the number one key. You've got to save. You can't want what. I never did get his name.
Atandi. Yeah.
And yours?
Bats.
Max didn't want what Tommy had. Didn't want some just like it. If he had spike wheels on his car, you better not want spike wheels on your car. But that's the way they are today. Back then, you didn't think about things like that. You would just be glad to have an automobile. You really would. One year, I had a grocery store out on Moon Lake. And I mean, I had a tremendous business. Here, this one of our friends came in. They all had gotten Cadillacs. They all had bought Cadillacs. And of course, everybody was coming in telling me about it, you know. You know, I'm supposed to want me a Cadillac, you know, because Livor just got him a Cadillac. And they spreading the words. I says, he ain't got nothing on me. I says, I got me 4 green Cadillacs. We bought 4 new tractors. That was our Cadillacs for that year. Ask me another question.
I understand that you have family business.
Family business.
That basically everyone in the family works here. And how does that family business work?
Well, everybody gets along well. I mean, it works good as a family. Everybody is a salary employee. Of course, we look at tax. You have to look at taxes and everything, and then most of the profits is left back into the companies to invest or do whatever they want to. Mm-hmm. But their living expenses their own that comes out of their salary. If they spend more than what their salary, they're in trouble. And of course, everything else is, as I say, left into the bond. They're all up at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes if they're late, you ain't met my husband. Papa, he gets them. They told them they were going to take out of their salary if they kept being late. They're on time. Yeah, you didn't even meet my grandson up at the gym. I've got one grandson. He, right now because he was short of labor, I've got one grandson that's driving a 18-wheeler, taking the bale cotton to the compress. When he gets back, he has to get on to the cotton seed truck and take a load of cotton seed over to Jonestown. Have you seen the mill over Jonestown?
The
Delta Oil Mill?
Yeah.
Well, that's where we send our cotton seed.
Oh, okay.
Over there to Delta Oil Mill.
Do you have any memories of the civil rights movement?
You're talking about when Martin Luther King?
Yeah, the civil rights movement in the Delta, I guess.
In the Delta, we ourselves, I mean, there was one time whenever Martin Luther King would be at a rally somewhere along, then it all would be like gossip. You know, if you want to pay attention to some of this stuff, you can pay attention and blow it out of proportion. There would be words that they are boycotting you. They're going to boycott you. But if you ignore it, and go along with your own business, they wouldn't boycott you. Because if you had your customers that dealt with you all the time, they weren't going to leave you because they cared about you. It was mostly the outsiders that would come in and cause problems.
What kinds of problems would they cause?
Oh, I don't know where you remember. You probably don't remember. I was running the store on Moon Lake. And it was back then whenever they had was wearing all the t-shirts like Black is Beautiful. I don't know where you remember any of that.
It
was born in 89.
Was that in 89? That's when
they were born. They were born in 89. They don't remember.
You read about it.
Yeah, but...
Do you know when that was?
I don't remember what year it was. But I'm just going to show you a little incident, what happened. I sold hunting and fishing license. If you fished on Moon Lake, you had to have a fishing license. And on that license, it had a place for your race. And it was either white, and most time we put C for colored. We never did call a black person a black person back then. We always called them a colored person. Not that, I mean, just sort of out of respect. Because, I mean, we all was friends. You know? But then here, I had this, they were out of Memphis, coming to the store, and getting their license. And I marked them C for colored. She jumped all over me. She told me she was black. She was not colored. Because black was beautiful. I said, yes, ma'am. Let her go. But from then on my hunting and fishing license, to keep from anything like that happening again, I put B for black. because, you know, it didn't. That was a very stupid. See, she's ready to agitate something, ready to get something started. If she wanted me to come back to her with something, and then there would be a fuss or something like that. Oh. In the cities, because Lula's a very small town, in the cities there may be a little racial tension, but most of your racial tension and everything is in your big cities, not in your small and not in the Delta area. Yes, as I say, we all have been poor. And we have all cared about each other. Now, when my mother died of cancer, and from where I was raised, all these black people that had their little small homes back there, they would come up and stay with my mama, sit with mama, you know, while we had to go to work or something like that. And you try to pay them. You'd insult them, you'd hurt their feelings. Because see, they had remembered everything that Mama had done for them, and they didn't want any faith. I mean, it was, but it's not that way today. You got to pay me. What you gonna pay me for this interview?
Had a couple quarters.
Uh-oh.
What do you think about the election right now? Or just ended?
Well, I'm very disappointed in Pennsylvania. Mm. I did not think Pennsylvania would support Obama. I know Pennsylvania has a lot of coal, a big industry. And he told the truth. And this is just from our experience in a small town with a small cotton gin. He would bankrupt the industries because they're going to have to be in compliance with all the green air pollution. See, this is what they're all, because of climate change and everything like that, all these factories and things are going to have all these emissions. And when he said that he would bankrupt them, and he meant it, and he will, because there's another one right behind him that's going to push him and make him enforce it. I mean, all these, this climate change, Alaska might be in Texas before it's over. Now, what do you think about the election?
Do I think? Mm-hmm. I think it's an historic moment for America.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Well, I put it like this, I sure hope you're right. I really do.
We got a lot of challenges facing us, and I just hope he's up to the task.
I hope and pray he is too. He's a very intelligent guy.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm a Christian, and I'm just hoping that when he said that he was a Christian, that he is a Christian. I hope he just didn't say it to keep the publicity away from it. Mm-hmm. Now, if he's a Christian, he can handle the job. If he's not a Christian, he cannot. America will be in a bad shape.
You think he might not be?
I don't like to question anybody's Christianity. I said I hope that he is.
Yeah.
He said he was. But then, you look. Where did he get all of his money?
From donations.
How much did you donate?
My dad donated $200. I didn't do anything.
Sure would have had to get a lot of $200 to take in $150 million in 1 month.
Okay, so where did he get it from?
I don't think it can be proved. It can be proved. The FBI would investigate. I think it came in from the foreign countries. Came in from the foreign countries. That's where I really think it came from. And I just hope he doesn't have to answer to any of them. Because he probably does not know where it came from. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he did give back his $235. The campaign did give the $235 that his aunt that was living in the United States illegal, and she had contributed that to his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it to some charity. Took it out of the campaign money. He did do that. Did your professor, I want to see. You got to chew tobacco.
Hmm? Is there anything else you'd like to ask?
He don't need to be shook. She's shaking her hair. What are the